top shot. Posted in front of the tribe, from the tribe, selling to the sun come down. All right, guys, welcome back to another edition of This Week in College Football, brought to you by CFB Talk Daily. Today is Saturday, June 20th. We got some things on the agenda. We have, you know, our regular podcast talk. We also are going to wrap it up with an interview with J.C. Latham. He's currently committed to Alabama. If you want to stay tuned towards the end of the episode, we talk about someone who closely is affected to the Alabama program. Some people may already know who I'm talking about. So we're going to jump into our first thing. All right, guys, welcome back to another edition of This Week in College Football, brought to you by CFB Talk Daily. Today is Saturday, June 20th. We got some things on the agenda. We're in June. We're close to another college football season. Hopefully we're getting close, though. So the first thing we're going to jump right into talking about is, I guess if we're going to steal a bit from part of my take, we're going to steal from them. Who's back of the week? It's Reggie Bush is back at USC.
I'll explain a little bit. They ended their 10-year disassociation with him, which personally I think is stupid. I think the whole, like, vacating wins and, like, vacating Heisman trophies, which, by the way, give Reggie his Heisman back, I think it's just kind of stupid. You can't, like, just pretend it didn't happen as a punishment. Like, I feel like that's just – it's just so stupid.
Yeah, I mean, like, he – and when you think of USC premier players and the top guys that have ever gone through that program, Reggie Bush pops off that list. So if the school was going to ban him, they should still recognize that the years that they had with him on the team. Because I believe they just basically forgot those teams that he was on. So they just said, like, oh, this year basically never happened in program history. Yeah, they don't recognize the wins. That was what I'm saying. Like, they don't recognize those wins towards the school. Like, the school itself doesn't recognize those wins, which is, it's kind of weird for me. If you're going to let him back in to associate with the school now, recognize his career.
Yeah. And I actually talked about, you know, that USC team when we talked about who we thought should have the Last Dance episodes. I talked about, you know, a team like that who has wins taken away from them, like an aftermath. So I'm looking right now, and USC was forced to vacate 14 wins from December of 2004 through the 2005 season. And I think they may have also had to vacate a Pac-12 championship, a Pac-10 championship at the time, and the national championships that they won. So, I mean, I'm trying to remember what Bush did, and I believe it was just, you know, one of those receiving benefits off of the field and getting recruited.
He was getting paid to play there.
He had a house. I think that's what it was.
But in my opinion, like, things like that, if you want to penalize the player while you get them while they're in college, that's one thing. You know, even after they graduate, if you want to go after the school, that's another thing. But to me, what happened with Reggie Bush had no impact on how he performed on the field. You know, he wasn't performing better because he had a house that was given to him. So I don't agree with the Heisman being taken away from him. I like what Mike said. I'm happy that it's, you know, hopefully USC recognizes that error again, because like what you said, it seems as if like that time never happened for USC. And I mean, for an already storied program in college football, you know, that's a really big time for a big program, you know, just to go under the rug.
Yeah, like, especially now, since the rumors are recirculating for NCAA players to benefit off their image and likeliness. So if the NCAA is going to allow, like, even Florida already passed that bill for, I believe, 2022, I think they're going to start having college players accept money. Mm-hmm. Once the NCAA, I guess, possibly will have to be forced their hand to recognize it, they have to give the Heisman back to Reggie Bush at that point. Because now you're accepting players to receive money and benefits from their program. So at that point, Reggie Bush did nothing wrong.
And you're telling me that Reggie Bush wouldn't be a really good cover athlete on NCAA 21?
Oh, my God. That'd
be crazy.
Welcome back, Reggie Bush.
Which would be, I think, his second time on the cover.
That would be wild. All right, so it's our next topic we have is so the NCAA has mandated that Election Day this year. There will be no athletic events. You can't have – I don't think you can have meetings. You can't have practice, and you can't have a game. There was one game believe it was between the University of Buffalo and another school, and they had to move the game back a day or forward a day. I can't remember which one. But so only one game was affected. But what do you guys think about that?
I like that, especially in this day and age. You know, everyone is telling everyone to go out and vote. You know, it's part of our rights as Americans. So I think that that's pretty, you know, that's smart. And I think it's also smart how they made it. I believe it's just for the presidential elections. I'm actually surprised this wasn't a rule already, you know, because a lot of these schools, if you wanted them to go out and vote for, you know, their state senators, a lot of these kids aren't from the state which they're playing in. But for, you know, for presidential election, I think that makes sense. It gives these kids a chance to go out and have their opinions heard, you know, go do their duty as an American and get out and vote. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I definitely do too. Because if you look at normal working people, working class people, they all have off on election day. Schools are all off on election day. Normal jobs are off election days, or even if it's like a half day.
Or that, you know, they can't be denied the right to leave work to go vote.
Exactly. So, obviously, playing football at a D1 program, or any program for that matter, is a full-time job. It's a full-time commitment. So you giving these kids a day off to express their beliefs, their political views, it's great.
No, I agree. I think it's a great move by the NCAA. Like I said, I think it should only be for presidential elections. I feel like for state elections, it'd just be too much to try to coordinate a schedule around. One thing we do have to talk about that was not in the outline quick was so tomorrow – actually, this isn't even going to be out in time. This comes out on Saturday. But so tonight, we're having night number 2 of our NCAA streamer tournament. We have 3 games tonight starting at 9 p.m. that'll be hosted on our Twitch. And, you know, come tune in.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something interesting we've thrown together. We, you know, me, John, and Mike were just kind of, you know, talking about, you know, we really wish that we could get a lot of people watching NCAA 14. So we decided that because we don't have the capabilities to get the stream out on our Twitch, we reached out to a lot of people who already do stream. So we're going to, you know, luckily give these guys a platform who maybe haven't had a platform on their own. So we want to give them an opportunity to come out, you know, showcase their abilities. A lot of these people have, you know, really fun personalities to watch on screen. And you know, it's going to be some good NCAA 14 games. So if you're, you know, if you're free, you want to throw something on in the background while you're watching TV or while you're playing NCAA 14, we would definitely appreciate it if you came over, tuned in, you know, dropped some kind of insight on how these guys are doing.
All right. So the next topic that we have here is well, we can talk about BJ Foster quick. I don't know if you guys have seen the story about that. If not, I'll introduce it.
Yeah, I'll let you introduce it. I think we talked about it briefly, but you can introduce it.
So BJ Foster is a safety at Texas, and he apparently got so angry that he punched his car bumper or something like that and broke his hand. And Tom Herman said that BJ Foster fractured his hand. He got into a fight with the car bumper after he came out of a parking lot, and the car bumper banged up and nobody left a note. He got a little angry, decided he was going to take it out on the car bumper. We had a long conversation on that. Every time in my 45 years on a planet, when a player gets into a fight with an inanimate object, usually the object wins.
I mean, I saw that too, and I thought it was absolutely hysterical. The car was already damaged, so he's going to have to go out and pay for the damages to that car. And now he just damaged it more. So now he's got to pay more money towards the car to get it fixed. And then on top of that, a hospital bill for his broken hand. So now this kid's going to be in a cast for the beginning of the summer practices and maybe even into the season, which is absolutely ridiculous.
It's too funny. I didn't even think of that the car was already damaged and he made it worse and broke his hand.
Yeah, you got two more, you got two extra bills on top of that now. That's a damaged car. Like, come on, guy. I mean, you got to be a little smarter than that.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, you got to feel bad for the kid. Cause, I mean, if you know, you read around the Texas program, a lot of people, a lot of fans like him. You know, he's versatile. He can be played inside or outside of linebacker. He can jump in the corner for them. So he obviously has some talent. But something like this, you know, say this kid wanted to, you know, he turns himself into an NFL prospect. Something like this is something that NFL GMs are going to look back on and be like, this kid's just, you know, just
they're going to look back on this and be like, oh, this kid's a hothead real quick.
Yeah, I mean, this kid's a dummy. And something like, you know, You know, people get mad. I mean, I've gotten mad. I've wanted to punch things, inanimate objects. But like what Tom Herman said, most times the inanimate object is going to win, and you'll be walking away with a broken bone or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, so our next topic we have is Nebraska soon-to-be senior wide receiver J.D. Spielman, who's close to pretty much every Nebraska receiver record. He was on pace to break them this season and decided to transfer from the program. This is a little weird. I'm not really sure why he's transferring. I saw it said personal reasons. I also read that apparently there was mounting frustration and he hadn't talked to the coaches in around 3 months.
Yeah, so from what I saw on that, he was reaching out to one of the former coaches at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I forget the coach's name. I read it. I should have wrote it down, but I didn't. He was working out with the former coach and not speaking to a single coach or maybe even some players on the current roster. So he's got 1 year of eligibility left. So, I mean, I'm excited. Whoever is going to get this kid in the transfer portal is going to get a huge upside receiver with a lot of talent, a lot of speed, and great hands. I'm excited to see where this kid goes.
He came out on Twitter, I saw some people were, you know, giving him a hard time. I guess people who are closer to the program or, you know, big fans know that he was very close with Mike Williams and Javon McQuitty, who have both transferred. And they said, you know, he was so good of friends with them that when they left, he left, you know, kind of ripping him for saying that he's more loyal to his friends than he is the program. And he even came out and said that, my situation has nothing to do with my friends. It's deeper than football. If you don't know the truth, then don't say anything. In that same tweet that I first mentioned, someone said that, you know, his two friends were underachievers. And he also went back at that person and said that, you know, going off on work ethic, you know, none of my friends are underachievers. We showed up to work every day. We ain't trying to protest practice, none of that. I got too much love for my brothers to let y'all talk like this. So, I mean, these are people who were with the program with them. So I know, John, you told me one thing before that I forget who you said it was in the program said that, you know, if both parties are going the opposite ways, it's probably best to let the kid leave the program. So it doesn't sound like it was an ideal situation, but I don't believe it is a, you know, a real big messy situation, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it was probably, and for Nebraska, I mean, how bad of a look is it if you have a player who's like giving you like everything for 3 years and he wants to leave and then you don't let him? Like, I feel like it's just a bad situation. Like, you really don't have a choice. I feel like as a coach, like, you kind of have to let him go.
Yeah, it's going to be a massive hit to Nebraska. Oh, yeah. As I'm reading right now, they're left with Wandale Robinson and Cade Warner, who are ranked number 2 and 8 on last year's yardage list. So they're going to have to jump right into the fire and hope for the best. But it's a tough look for Nebraska, who's just dropping the kids to the transfer portal left and right now.
Yeah, so the next thing we're going to jump into is we're kind of going back onto some COVID stuff. You know, obviously kids are starting to get back into schools. Coaches are reporting we're having football activity. We had it back. And I know I saw earlier in the week, maybe last week, my time frame's kind of getting a little jumbled. I saw that Houston had to stop their practices because I think they had 6 kids test positive. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of thinking, what are your guys' take on this and how it impacts, you know, the near future and the potential for a season still?
I actually got an update today from Bleacher Report that the University of Texas had 13 players test positive for it too, which now leaves 23 players in quarantine. So with this situation's going on, it's getting crazy. Alabama had some positive tests too. So you're having these big-time programs forcing these kids back to practice. Yeah, everyone wants to go back to their sport, get back to some form of normality, but you're putting these kids in danger. You're putting these kids' health at risk. You want them on the field healthy, at full strength, ready to go, pedal to the metal, but you're going to risk these kids' health just for a couple games. So I think they did rush a little bit back, because as we see, a second wave kind of is coming in through states like South Carolina, Alabama, Texas, Arizona. A lot of those states are popping up with more cases. So I don't know. It's going to be a scary situation. It's going to be interesting to see how the NCAA plays it out, and we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, so you actually took exactly what I was going to say out of my mouth about the Texas thing. I saw Texas, I think Tulane, and I think Michigan State had one positive test out of 125. So I feel like, you know, the states that socially distance have had a little less tests. And when you look at the states that, you know, refuse to do so, you're seeing a lot more tests come back positive. So it's interesting. You know, going forward, I think this could potentially push back the season. I mean, there's been already been a Florida A&M game that got canceled September 12th. And the HBCU game canceled, I think, the week before that one. So it's not definitely not looking great right now.
Yeah, what's going to be worse is if one player pops up with a positive test, the whole program is going to be shut down for the near future. Like, it's similar to what's going on with baseball right now. They want to keep these kids away from their home lives. But what if one kid's not happy and they have a situation at home that they have to get home to? But once they get home, they want to come back. Are you going to let that kid back into the program? Are you going to quarantine them for 2 weeks? Like, what's going to happen? There's going to be a lot of hurdles to jump over just to hopefully keep your team safe.
Yeah, and one other thing I saw that was interesting, I saw Ohio State. Now, I'm not sure if the NCAA approved of this or if the NCAA gave the schools options, but I saw that Ohio State has decided to keep their testings private and classified, so they're not going to release it to the public. I don't know how I feel about that, truthfully. I don't know if I
can. Oklahoma's doing the same thing.
Yeah, it's like, I get it. Like, you don't want people to know what's going on. But then again, at the same time, I think that it's,
it's a global pandemic. You got
I would like to know if I'm not, maybe not me personally, but if, say I'm someone who has a kid on the Ohio State team who I don't talk to every day, it sucks to find out that way, but I'd hate to, not know what's going on. Maybe I see on ESPN, player at Ohio State tested positive for coronavirus. And then you can reach out and be like, hey, what's going on? Like, I think that that should be public knowledge because it's, such a public pandemic.
Yeah. Well, what I'm curious about to see is, like, what if, is it just for the school not to release the kid's name, or is it for like the school not to release any information saying, okay, one kid tested positive? If that one kid tests positive, are they just going to keep it hush hush, or are they going to say one kid tested positive but we're not releasing the athlete's name?
Yeah, and like, well, I get, like, if they're not releasing the public, but, like, if I'm Oregon, I would like to know because I'm supposed to play you week three or week two.
Exactly.
I'd like to know.
One funny thing. I mean, you guys both know I had the Rona, but where I worked, they were actually they were keeping it hush hush from us if other people tested positive. So I found out after I got it that like four people I'd been in contact with positive like the week before.
And it's actually funny because John works for the Ohio State football team.
Funny story. I am Zach Smith.
Yeah, John actually was a co-defensive coordinator at Ohio State last year.
Yeah, I know Greg very well. Very well. All right. So our next topic is Paul Feinbaum is reportedly out at SEC Nation.
Yeah, I think that's crazy because when you think of the – not even just like television-wise. When you think of the SEC, to me, what comes to mind is Paul Feinbaum.
I mean, it's good for a lot of viewers because a lot of viewers do not like him. Because he just talks about Alabama this, Alabama that. So, I mean, the guy still has a job at ESPN, correct?
Yes.
So he's still going to be broadcasting, doing his thing, but his strength is in the SEC. And when you think of SEC broadcasting or SEC knowledge, you think of Paul Feinbaum. So it will be very interesting to see how this goes forward.
Yeah, hold on. Jenny in Alabama, what's going on? Well, Paul, I can't believe they let you go for SEC Nation. So that's how I feel. I was kind of blindsided that he was let go, and I'm sure Jenny from Alabama feels the same way.
I'm like curious to see like how SEC Nation does, because I believe I just saw it was Tim Tebow is going to be the host, and it'll be with Jordan Rodgers, who's Aaron Rodgers' brother, who was also on The Bachelorette. The Bachelorette, I guess it is. So I'm wondering, like, if their views go down. Because I think a lot of people watch the SEC Nation, like, when it's on TV, just to watch Paul Feinbaum interact with his fans. Because he almost has, like, a Mike Francesa thing with them. So, like, people who aren't from the New York area who don't know Mike Francesa as well. Like a big thing with Francesa is people call in just to mess with him.
Oh, it's the best. We do it all the time.
Yeah, and like I think that like a lot of people call into Finebaum just to get him going on, you know, Alabama or talking about, you know, when it was UCF, you know, they don't play nobody. Like, you know, those kinds of atmosphere. So I'm almost wondering if wherever Paul Finebaum ends up on ESPN, because he still has the job with ESPN, you know, like if he gets his own hourly show or hour, like hour and a half show, whatever it is, if his people just follow him over there and then SEC Nation is kind of just falling apart a little bit.
I actually think that he should launch an app where you have to pay like $8.99 a month to join and ask some questions.
And I think he should retire and then come back. And again, for the people who aren't from New York, that's what exactly what Mike Francesa did. Francesa was terrible on air. You couldn't even stand to listen to him when it was free. And then he retired and said, I'm going to make you pay $8.99 to hear me say stupid things. And then he came back on air, retired again, and now he's just...
He's there. He's there.
On the app.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see that Tim Tebow is going to give a nice inspirational speech during that his show that he's going to have now with Aaron Rodgers' brother.
Did you see the Tim Tebow clip when he was with Pat McAfee when they were at Topgolf?
I did not, no.
So they were at Topgolf, and I believe they were doing like an athlete long drive. So they were taking athletes from different sports and seeing who could drive the farthest. And Tebow hit an absolute nuke. And McAfee in the background goes, Jesus. And Tim Tebow, in Tim Tebow style, without hesitation, goes, loves you. Like, I just think that's like such the classic Tebow.
That's Tebow in a couple words right there.
Which I guess I guess that means Tebow's done with the Mets, huh?
I mean, it was a publicity stunt. It really was.
All right, so our last topic we have is a little more on a serious note. Talk about a shitty person. Strength and conditioning coach at Iowa, who I want to add some background here. He was the highest paid strength and conditioning coach in the country.
How long was he there for? Does anyone know?
I believe over 20 years, I read. And yeah, he was the highest paid strength and conditioning coach in the country and widely regarded as the best strength and conditioning coach in the country. He started coaching at Iowa in 1999. So yeah, around 20 years.
I was a year old when this man started coaching, which is crazy.
Yeah, I think that in today's day and age of social media, you know, this stuff doesn't go under the rug like it probably did in the 70s and 80s, you know, coming out and being, you know, borderline on the race, you know, like being racist. So I'm glad this came to light. This is something that you can't have that in college football. It's a bad look. It's a blemish for the sport. So to have this come out and have Iowa take care of it the way they did, I think it's good for the sport itself.
Yeah, the big thing about football is the brotherhood aspect. Would you guys agree?
Absolutely. Yeah.
The second you walk in that locker room, regardless of who you are, what position you play, where you're from, the color of your skin, you share that locker room with your brothers, regardless of where you are. And for him to say the things he said, it destroys, one, the locker room aspect, and two, it destroys the brotherhood that football players are supposed to have with each other.
No, you're right. I feel like any sport, you're supposed to have like that little, like, the camaraderie. Like, you want to win for each other.
Mm-hmm.
So just real quick, just some of the allegations here. One guy said that this guy's in the NFL now. He said, dude, deadass told me I couldn't afford golf clubs. One player said that Doyle asked him if he gangbangs in the offseason because he doesn't wrestle or run track. He then also reportedly made fun of a kid who I believe he was dyslexic and on the team, and he wrote his GPA up on the board in front of the team, made fun of it. And then he also changed some of the signs because the kid was too stupid to understand the other ones. So that's being a shitty person.
That's just, you know, that you got intolerable, not only in sports, even in the workplace, you know, that would never go by. But also a thing on him, I just saw his son, who was at Iowa, had just announced he's transferring to Baylor.
Saw that.
I think that kid probably was kind of forced out at that point.
How are you going to go back?
Dylan Doyle is going to join Baylor.
Yeah. The one thing I thought that was funny, last thing I wanted to say was in his tweet, he says that Baylor provides him a special situation to be part of a culture with world-class people and world-class coaches every day, and I can't wait to get started.
Oh, shade.
I mean, it's what I'm curious. I'm also going to be curious to see that are the Baylor players and coaches are going to be accepting of this Dylan Doyle, or are they going to just label him like with his dad?
Well, I mean, from what I saw, all like the Iowa players were like super supportive of him when he decided he had to transfer. So I feel like he'll be accepted because, like, you know, at the end of the day, it's a shitty situation for the kid. Like, you know, like he didn't say any of those things. None of the allegations were against him, but he obviously it affects him in a pretty large way.
Yeah, it would have been tough for him to go back.
Yeah.
Yeah, like at that point, as much as a good player and a good person that you've built yourself up to be, you're still going to have that reputation of what your father did and what your father said. So mm-hmm. I wish him the best of luck. I hope he absolutely kills it at Baylor and hope for a bright future for the kid.
Yeah, all right. So I have here. I was reading, like, so some schools, like, some players were alleging that, like, coaches were racist because, like, they don't allow them to wear, like, sweatshirts for road games or, like, you know, one player said he got kicked out of the workouts for wearing the wrong shoes. I feel like that's, like, a pretty common thing. I mean, you guys both played a college sport, but, I mean, like, if you came in, like, in the wrong attire, would it be wrong to be kicked out of a practice? Like,
yeah, I mean, you're a one unit, you're one team. You dress alike, you look alike, you're brothers, and you do everything together. You eat together, do everything. So, I mean, it's part of the uniform. So mm-hmm. most times coaches will say, you're like, when you go to the locker room, you're wearing this shirt, these shorts or pants, and these shoes. See you in 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it could be something where it's just like that situation where the kid just didn't understand the uniform policy, or I don't know. It could be literally anything.
Yeah, I just wanted your guys' opinion on that.
Yeah, I mean, and when I played, it was, you know, we played in the Northeast in baseball in early spring. So, I mean, people from up here know how cold it gets. But we had some games where it was 30 degrees. And, you know, our rule was we couldn't wear hoods, you know, regardless if it was a practice or a game. And, you know, everyone followed that rule. And we had a big mix of guys on this team. You know, we had, you know, white guys, kids from Puerto Rico, kids who had moved to the States from Puerto Rico. We had a couple African-American kids. So we had all sorts of different guys, and we all followed the same rule. And I you know, it never came down to, you know, coach doesn't want me to wear my hoodie because I'm Puerto Rican. Like, no, it's because, you know, we're following a guideline of, you know, what we're supposed to look like. And that was, you know, that was understood. So I think that's a big misconception that some kids have.
You know, it could be 30 degrees and snowing, and we have no hoods on, and we're all in black sweatshirts and black sleeves.
Yeah, like, you know, like some of these programs have probably been doing, you know, you have to wear this shirt with this tie and these pants, and that's probably been the rule for 30 years, like walking to the bus. Like, they're not going to make an exception for you.
Yeah, just like the Yankees, like their beard rule. Like, you can't do it. Like, it's just not for debate. Like,
yeah, exactly. And then the Yankees have lost guys because of it, but that's just their rule.
Hey, Garrett Cole shaved his beard for the Yankees, so
see that. Yeah, well, I mean, I'll shave my beard for
a $300 million contract. Yeah.
I would shave my whole body for $300 million.
I would shave my whole body for $300 million.
Eyebrows included, I'm getting it all off.
All right, so now we're going to jump into, like I said, the J.C. Latham interview. A lot of the websites for the recruiting have him as a top 10 offensive lineman in the 2021 class, currently committed to Alabama. So we will catch you guys on the other side of that interview. You want to play it, then it's going down. We ain't hesitating, bullies get the blazing. I'm going to lay him down like he in a lounge. Walk him down, walk him down, walk him down. All right, so now we welcome J.C. Latham, the number 17th player in the country. If you go by 247 Sports, you would be number 3 player in the country, J.C.
That's crazy. That's crazy, but yes, sir.
Yeah, I want to make it known that you were by far the highest-ranked player we've ever had on the podcast.
Yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah, right. So we're very excited to have you. We've had a few, like, some D1 starters on, but out of high school, you were by far the highest.
All right, cool. That's cool. I like that.
So I want to talk about, well, the first thing is IMG Academy. Everyone hears about it. People talk about it. How surreal is it being down there and, like, having that weight room in high school?
It's kind of insane, low-key, because before I used to go to a school called Calvin Memorial, and the weight room was in the basement. They had, like, four benches, four squat racks, and a little platform to do cleans and snatches and all. And now I'm at IMG where they got, like, 30 benches, 30 squat racks. They got, like, cameras that can test your speed or how fast you can squat. And then above it, they have, like, APD rooms where you can work on your mental aspect of the game. So, and then they have training rooms and all that stuff. It's definitely insane for a high school.
Yeah, that's crazy. So one of our people we've had in the past, he's at Temple now. He went to a JUCO in New York, and their weight room, they had a deal with the Planet Fitness on a campus, and they had to go work out at a public gym. So,
dang.
Yeah. So IMG has better weight rooms than some colleges, which is crazy.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
Another thing to ask is, how fun is it, you know, just beating up on, like, you know, the other schools you guys play? Like, do you guys ever go into a game, like, worried or?
I'd say our coach definitely stresses, even against, like, the teams that we know we're going to beat. Our coach definitely stresses the importance of being locked in and focused and not being one of those schools that, like, you'll see that should have won and were supposed to win that ended up being an upset type team. So every week last year going into a game, coach was just making sure we were ready and locked in and focused, and we never switched up the game plan.
Yeah, I mean, so. I've seen a few IMG games, like, on YouTube, because, like, I was doing some research on some things before we had you on. And, I mean, you guys are definitely a stupid talented high school team. But, you know, if you lose focus, that's when upsets happen. So that's pretty smart.
Yeah, no doubt. That's what we try to focus on.
So another thing that I want, I mean, have you ever been, like, in the same, like, camp as, like, Parrish Johnson Jr.? Like, at, like, camps with him or no?
Say it again?
Do you know Parrish Johnson Jr.? I think he's at Ohio State, tackle?
Yeah, he's at Ohio State. Yes, sir.
Yeah. So when I watched your film, that's who you reminded me of. Because, like, I mean, you watch a lot of offensive linemen film in high school, and, like, a lot of guys don't finish their blocks and stuff. But you two, like, it's like you guys enjoy finishing the blocks. Like,
no, I definitely do. He probably does, too. But, I know for a fact I definitely do. It's because of where I'm from, or really how I was raised. You was taught to really finish strong and everything. So even back at D-line, when I was at D-end or D-tackle, you see clips and plays of me just chasing down just the ball. So now that I'm playing O-line, until I hear the whistle blown, I'm going to finish my block, whether it's 30 yards down the field or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, because you kind of see some of the defensive aggressiveness in you when you play on the O-line. Like I said, I watched the film, and, like, you know, the play's 15 yards downfield already, and the kid's trying to get up, and, like, it's not happening.
Yeah, no doubt.
But that's good, though. I mean, that's probably why you're a five-star and a projected first-round pick already by 247 Sports. So that's crazy. So I want to talk, cause you just switched to O-line last year, right? For the first year.
Yeah.
So, looking back on it, was there any, like, skepticism on your part when you got asked to switch to O-line, or was it kind of like a mutual decision?
It definitely was. Only because of the fact that I already was trying to, like, when I was in Florida, I was a D-line. I kind of saw how the next level was about to be. So, I was already trying to get ready for the next level at D-line, and then they switched me over my junior year. So I was kind of worried about how this is going to play out, because I've never played O-line. And on top of all that, it isn't like a local high school where the kids aren't that good or the kids are just average. This is like IMG, where you're going against the best out of the best for high school sports. So yeah. That definitely was a concern for me.
Yeah, I mean, a five-star at a public school, like, you could play awful. You're not going to get benched. It's not going to happen. Like,
yeah, no doubt.
At IMG, it's different. So I want to ask, I couldn't find this anywhere. Who's your roommate, IMG?
His name is Sam. He's from, all right, so he was born in Africa, right? And he stayed, Nigeria, my bad. And he stayed there until 2012, and then he moved to Boston. So his last name has like an accent on it that you can't pronounce unless you're like native to the land. Like, that's what he was telling me when he moved in. But yeah, that's my roommate though.
Sam, yeah, I can't pronounce it either. I got what you're saying. Yes, because I ask you, because I was going to try to give you a little chance to shout out some of your teammates here. So if there's any player on IMG right now that you think isn't getting enough love by maybe like college coaches or recruiting services, who do you think that'd be?
Definitely Omar Abiros. Personally, like when I'm on trips, I'll hear his name be buzzed a little bit about how good he was doing during the year. But I wouldn't hear personally like that they're talking to him. So he's definitely – he led the nation. He had 6 picks in the first 2 games, and he had 4 of them in 1 game.
Damn.
So, yeah, no doubt. He was definitely, to me, one of the best DBs I've ever really seen. Corey Palmer also. He's just a straight playmaker. We were the first – I don't know if it was our 3rd game or 4th game, but the first 3 games, whatnot, we were straight running the ball. And then we played St. Joseph's up in the Maryland area, DMV area.
Mm-hmm.
And they were shutting it down. They were shutting it down. So I'm like, yo, we got to pass it. Like, we got to air the ball out. And we go to Corey like 7 times, and every single one was caught, besides one of them, which he got held on, but the refs didn't even call it. The dude like threw him down before he could even jump, and the ref didn't even call it. So, but he had like 150 yards in 1 half, 2 touchdowns. That, and that was just in a half, and he's definitely a playmaker. He blocks as a receiver, but you don't see that often.
And, definitely don't see that in high school a lot. Block receivers that like willingly block.
Yeah, no doubt. And then there's one other guy, JT Ellis. He's a straight dog. When I was at DN and D tackle, he was linebacker, and you just hear everyone saying like you don't want to cross his way as a receiver because he benches like 450. He's quick, runs like a 4.6. You know, he's like 6 feet and 6'1". And I mean, yeah, he's just a dog out there. He'll never give up. He's always making plays. So when I got moved to O-line, I knew it was going to be tough trying to block him. And it definitely has, because he won the majority of the reps when I was at O-line my junior year. So you see it pre-produced out there on the field, because he'd be up there. There was a Clemson commit named DeMonte Capehart. He was like number 2 defensive tackle in the nation. And JT, every game, day in, day out, he'd have the close to the same amount of sacks as him and tackles as him every game. So, I mean, he's definitely one of the guys who are definitely underrated on our team.
Cool. Yeah, I'm definitely going to take a look at some of them, because I haven't heard of, I'm going to be honest, I haven't heard of all of them, but you know, it's hard to keep up. So I run this whole Twitter account pretty much by myself, one other friend. So it's hard to keep up with like everyone. So I will watch their stuff after this. So last question about high school. So, cause I see a lot of tweets at this all the time, and people say that like guys at IMG are like spoiled and stuff. So yeah, what would you say to that? Like, I mean, what don't they know about being at IMG Academy? Like the grind.
They don't know how hard it is to have to wake up at 5 in the morning and go to treatment all across campus. And then after treatment, that takes an hour, go to breakfast check. And if you miss breakfast check, you're running the next morning at like 5. And I just messed your whole schedule up. But you got to get to the breakfast check, make sure you get breakfast. And then after that, you have workouts at like 7:38. So workouts at 7:38. And then you'll have meetings or APD at like 9 all the way to probably like 11:30 something. So, and then right after, like, you get out at, like, 11:30. Some players, like me, I stayed after. I stayed after to work out and get better. So I'd be in the dorm room by, like, 12:30. And then school would be at, like, 1. So you'd have to hurry up and get lunch and school. And then you get out of school at 6. And then you got study hall or ACT prep at 7 all the way till 9. And you do that 5 days a week.
Damn, so like, it's like a 12-hour day.
Yeah, no doubt. It's definitely long.
So just to make sure I'm getting this right, you do like 6 hours of football before you even go to school, really?
Yeah, for real. And we got like the school is hard because the coaches, just because we're athletes, everyone's an athlete here. Everyone's a D1 prospect, so they're not gonna like favor that. They hold you to a certain standard, and the teachers there, they really want you to succeed, and they push the best out of you. So as soon as you get off the field, going 100%, you got to be able to maintain in the classroom. And mentally be able to lock in for the rest of the day. So, and that's definitely tough too.
Yeah, so it definitely doesn't sound like you guys are spoiled or have it easier or nothing like that. Cause
I feel like that's what a lot
of like the public schools say when they like see kids from IMG. They're like, oh well, these kids got it easy, but really it's like there's 5 days a week. That's like a full time job.
There is some students there who are, I would say, a little spoiled, but I say for the majority part, all the guys that you'll see on YouTube and all that stuff, those are the guys who aren't spoiled at all. So, like, all the players who are being made, like OJ, Corey, JT, all of us, like, none of us are spoiled. Like, we're grateful for everything that IMG has really done for us.
Yeah, damn. All right, so the one thing I want to talk about is So you just committed to Alabama this week, I believe, right? Like four days ago?
No, it was on Friday, yesterday, last Friday.
Yeah, okay, so last Friday. So, sorry, I got those days confused. So, your position coach, I think, is one of my favorite college coaches of all time, and Kyle Flood. So, you want to talk about him a little bit?
Yeah, no doubt. So, like I mentioned in other interviews and all, I never really saw myself playing at a school like Alabama because I was a D lineman, and I wanted to go to a school that I could build kind of my own dynasty around, you know, kind of like start something of my own. And then I switched to O-line, so I had to basically wipe out everything that I previously known how to do and try to build my own at O-line. And that's when I realized that this college, basically when you're going to college and on, it has to be a business decision. So right around the time Corona was going to happen, or happened actually, I was planning on committing. And it was like at that time, Alabama was up there, but Ohio State and LSU were kind of like neck and neck. And my coach was telling me, he was like, go to where you feel like you're at home. And I told him, I was like, I've been to Ohio State a few times, but I couldn't get to LSU because the first time I was supposed to go there, the airport over there at LSU, it had a tropical storm, so they shut it down. It was like a blackout, so they couldn't land in the plane, so they shut it down. So it was a game against Auburn that happened, and then their spring game, I was gonna commit after the spring game to either LSU, Ohio State, or you know Bama and all them, and the spring game got canceled. So I told my coach, I was like, yo, I think I gotta like hold off my commitment until stuff starts opening back up. And then stuff started closing more and more. So I realized, like, I can't plan on stuff opening up because I'm trying to graduate in less than 6 months. So I got to figure out where I'm going to go. So I can't base this off of something like the Corona where no one knows a lot about. So I had to tell them, I was like, I'm going to take some virtual tours and talk to the coaches virtually. And then I'm going to make a decision off that. And right around that time of me making that decision, Coach Flood started talking to me a lot. Yeah, he started talking to me day in and day out. And that relationship just spiraled and, you know, just got better every single day. And that's when we started talking more in depth. And that's when I realized Alabama is a school for me.
Yeah. And so I kept seeing your name, like, from, like, a few Buckeyes things, and they're always like, oh, JC Latham, like, commit watch and stuff like that. Like, so I thought you were going to be a Buckeye, to be honest.
My coach, he was telling me to keep it on low because Corona was messing everything up. So he told me to just focus on school and talking to the coaches. So, like, the last thing everyone knew was I was favoring Ohio State. And then I kind of, like, went offline for a while as far as interviews go. So,
yeah. Well, I appreciate you doing this one with us. I only have like two or three more questions. One comment I do have to make though is, it's crazy a school like Alabama. Like, I mean, Coach Flood, he's been a Power Five like head coach like recently, which is crazy. Like now he's a position coach at Alabama. Like, like he's coached like NFL guys and stuff of his own, ran a program, and now he's just like gonna be like your coach basically, which is nuts.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of it's funny to think about it like that.
Yeah. All right. So the last two questions I have. One is, have you visited the campus of Alabama yet?
I haven't got to because of whole Corona thing. I was trying to make a visit in this month, but when I was setting it up, all the coaches I was trying to visit, they told me to not make anything concrete because you never know what's going to happen as far as Corona. So,
yeah. So, and one thing a lot of like the public doesn't understand, because like a lot of people like understand recruiting and stuff, but they don't really understand. Like, you can't wait all year to commit to a school like Alabama or Ohio State or LSU, because like, I mean, sure, you're the number 17th tackle in the country, but behind you is four or five guys ready to commit if you don't. Like,
yeah, no doubt.
So yeah, like, I feel like a lot of people don't understand that like that spot's not always going to be there. Kind of.
Yeah, so you gotta kind of You're kind of on the clock, but you kind of want to take your time in the same sense of it, because you don't want to make make the wrong decision that'll affect your life and your future for the next 40 years. But then again, like you said, you got other guys out there who are just as good, if not better, than who you are. So you don't want your spot at the college that you want to go to taken. So
yeah. All right, so here's my last two. The first one is, who's the toughest player you went up against when you were playing O-line? Whether it be at a camp or in a game.
Tumisha was definitely tough. He was definitely tough because he was so aggressive with his hands. Let's see, who else was up there? That's a good question.
He's committed to Ohio State, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
The senior. I forgot his name, but he was an All-American last year at St. Francis Academy. He was a senior, and he was just aggressive, period, no matter what he did. And what didn't help was something happened on the other side of the O-line that someone, like, fell on my leg, and they sprained my ankle on, like, the second play of the game. And then three plays later, someone else hit my MCL. So, like, my whole left leg was just gone. I couldn't even, like, I could hardly walk. I had to leave the game on, like, crutches. So he was just so aggressive, and I was only on one leg, so it was hard to block him.
Damn. Did he get any sacks?
No, he didn't get a sack, but it was still definitely hard to block him, though.
Yeah, you're like, nah, I couldn't let him do that, but...
Nah, I couldn't.
All right, so the last thing here, I'm going to read you what a certain scout has said about you, and I want you to tell me if it's accurate or if you think it's, if it's cap. All right, so it says... possesses a large square frame with exceptional length, owns long arms and big hands, has added some mass, ready size and bulk standpoint, little bad weight, has a basketball background. And then the last part they say is also has the framework to develop into a strong pass blocker with length and reactive quickness within his pass set. So what do you think of that?
I think that's pretty accurate. Only thing is my weight, because they say, like, they had me at, I want to say, like, 285 or 290 before the year started, and then they upgraded it to, like, 305 or whatever, and my weight has been, like, 320, 315 this whole time. So, like, even before the season started, they were saying, like, I'm, like, so-and-so weight, playing like it's 270 when really it was, like, 315, 320, so...
Damn, so you're like 50 pounds heavier than they thought you were.
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, because I'm looking at Rivals right now. They say you're 285, which is...
Yeah, that's why I said it, because they're all saying like I move really well for my size when really like I'm a lot heavier than what they think I am.
So you move even better. Yeah, it's just muscle.
Yeah.
All right, well, JC, I appreciate you coming on. I mean, you're ready, so it's going to be crazy when you're at Alabama for a few years, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
All right, yeah, I appreciate you coming on.
No doubt. Anytime.
All right, guys. So that was JC Latham. Like I said, Alabama guy. So that's going to wrap it up for this week. So like normal, we will see you guys in 2 weeks. Until then, guys, thanks for tuning in.